The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Did all that oil go from that small slick earlier this summer? Remember it? It was in the Gulf of Mexico. Oh, that one. Scientists have part of the answer, and they found it lying on the bottom of the ocean floor. What does that mean for marine life in that fragile ecosystem? We'll find out from marine toxicologist and favorite guest Dr. Ricky Ott in a moment. Good day. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. You're listening to Greenfront Radio. In our second half, we'll get the dirt on California's pivotal Proposition 23. The effort to pass it is funded heavily by, you guessed it, the oil industry. So what are they so afraid of? What do they stand to lose? We'll find out from one of the campaign spokesmen. There is a lot at stake for California's environment, climate change, and the rest of the country. So in essence, all of us. It is now my great pleasure to welcome back to the program one of my sheroes, Ricky Ott. She is an expert on the impact of oil on bodies of water, large and small. Having been in the center of the Exxon Valdez disaster, a fisherman up in Alaska, covering the aftermath there and writing a couple of books on that. And in the last few months, of course, she's been in the heart of the storm in the Gulf of Mexico as the great oil kill unravels. And so really pleased to have her, especially on short notice. Welcome to the program, Ricky.
Thank you, Betsy.
Have you been down there all this time since we last spoke? I think it was in July that you were on the program last.
I have.
And what's happening down there now? We'll get to the latest news about where some of that oil ended up settling, but tell us what it's been like the last few months as the mainstream media begins to, once that oil gush stopped, turn away from the story.
Well, I had actually hoped to go home by now. And August changed everything. I happened to be in Biloxi at the first meeting of commercial fishermen from four different states. And it was to see if they could get consensus, sort of what's going on in your state, where do we want to head. That was August 3rd, 4th, and 5th. It was at the very time when BP's and NOAA's infamous pie chart came out that says, you know, what it could be interpreted to mean that 75 to 80% of the oil had simply gone away. And indeed, that's how it was initially interpreted by the media. Those 3 days were like hell days. I couldn't believe it. Fishermen's phones started ringing off the hook. And this is from Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana, with reports from back home of massive spraying of dispersants in inland waters, in particular at night, although they've gotten bolder now, fish kills and sick people. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I spent most of the day on Friday trying to get one person in particular who was peeing brown and puking brown into emergency room care, and we now suspect that it was, which I have photos of, the dispersant right across his street at a decon station that was dribbling into the marina, and basically the wind would blow and he'd get toxic hits of this stuff. But what was going on was, and it has since gone on for this past month and a half now, is a very super aggressive move by both BP and the federal government to have the reality of the Gulf match this end game, this new end game, that everything's over, there's no oil, fisheries can be reopened, everything's fine, let's go back to our old drill baby drill plan, and continue our reliance on oil. When that, the way August unfolded, I was just shocked. I mean, I thought I'd seen enough of government complicity up to that point, but August really topped the charts. And so I decided that I'm staying down here for basically 1 year. I'm going to give it 1 year. I'm going to be home. I'm going to go do some prior engagements for the latter part of the fall. But I'm coming back down here in January, and we're going to slug this out because I believe that this is still the best opportunity that we have as a nation to wake up to the full cost of our oil dependency and change the end game. And changing the end game has got to start in the South, and it's got to come from the people who are most impacted. And unfortunately, after what's come down in August and is still coming down now, I mean, there's fresh reports of and photos of oil just bubbling up in the marshes of Barataria, where I am right now.
Ricky?
Ricky? Yep.
We're hearing some clicking on the line, and what you're saying is so important. I want to make sure listeners don't tune out because of it. We're going to take a quick break and try to get a better line so we don't have to be distracted by that noise. I don't know if it's your end or mine, but stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple minutes continuing our conversation with Dr. Ricky Ott, the expert on what has been going on down in the Gulf, and even as mainstream media takes their cameras away and sends reporters home, the story is so far from over. We're going to find out what we all need to be concerned about. We'll be right back.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Acclaimed theoretical physicist Dr. Michio Kaku hosts Explorations, with topics ranging from the physics of gravity to the ever-expanding universe. With his lighthearted personality and natural charisma, Dr. Kaku breaks down intricate theories with a comprehensible approach. He's one of the greatest popularizers of science, who will take you on a fascinating journey into the world of scientific understanding. So let's take an exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Listen to Of Consuming Interest every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Jim Turner, attorney in Washington, D.C., chairman of the Board of Citizens for Health. Every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, we discuss a topic of consuming interest, often about health, but also about politics, commerce, and whatever the current topic of the day might be. Of Consuming Interest, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Mitchell J. Raven to tell you that we have two new time slots. Every Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Progressive Radio Network. Join me as I interview and dialogue with the sung and unsung heroes of society with passion and with commitment. Scientists, healers, filmmakers, musicians, environmentalists, and gurus on Mondays, and a call-in show where you'll be the focus on Wednesdays. Again, Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m., join Mitchell Raven as together we create a better world.
Hello, this is Eric Ofner, your host of the best jazz show on the air. On Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
The Progressive Radio Network is the home for progressive minds. It's the place where progressives get together to discuss important topics with informed opinions, minus the agenda. PRN is the place for fresh, stimulating, commercial-free radio content from leading progressives all over the world every day. The Progressive Radio Network, making the world a more informed place, one mind at a time.
Hi, I'm Daryl Clark.
Bob Levis.
Ron Waits.
And we're your Progressive News Weekly team here on Progressive Radio Network.
Shank of the Morning, the Shank of the Week, Wednesdays, 10 a.m., 11 a.m.
We are you as if you had a mic in your hand the way we do.
It's news you can use. News for you, by you, and of you.
Grassroots activism.
That's all she wrote, folks.
This is Bill Bowie.
And this is Kelsey Flynn.
Of Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability.
We bring you news and interviews
with the likes of Wangari Maathai, Bill McKibben, Hazel Henderson, Paul Hawken, Francis Moore LePay, and many others. Tune in to Sea Change Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network on Saturdays at 7 in the evening.
Ever wonder why some people have successful lives? Well, let's shrink about this. Hi, I'm Dr. Molly Barrow, author of Matchlines for Singles and the Malia and Teacup self-esteem building series for children. Please join me and my guests every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Welcome back to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, in conversation with the wonderfully informative and generous with her time, Dr. Ricky Ott. She's been on the road, mostly stationed in the Gulf of Mexico for the duration of the summer, continuing to stay there to follow up on the impacts of the great oil kill from the Deepwater Horizon. They were saying, well, gee, that water just disappeared right after we stopped the leak. And sure enough, it didn't evaporate or dissipate. It settled to the seafloor, and they have found at least some of the 4 million barrels of oil down there in the Gulf. And she's joining us, hopefully, with a better line so we can hear what she's saying about what this new discovery indicates. Thanks for your patience, Ricky.
Sure, Betsy. It was a little weird because I couldn't hear any problem at my end, so I'm glad you picked up on it.
Good. Much better now.
Okay, great. So changing in the Gulf, you know, you have to change people's minds before you can change anything else. And what people have seen down here with this latest sort of assault from BP and the government is it's just pure lies. Of course the oil didn't go away. And what the fishermen, so the fishermen from our meeting decided they were going to go out and prove that it was there because they already knew that it was. So they devised ways of sampling the false plume, what they're calling the false plume, when they would go out into 40 feet of water and they would, their depth sounder would show a bottom, a false bottom at 12 feet. They would, sparkly clear ocean, they would lower absorbent pad down into 12 feet and pull it back up and it would be full of oil. And they would do this 8 of 8 times and come up with 8 hits to show people on their boats. They would stuff cut up absorbent material, boom, into crab pots or their shrimp trawls and lower them down and bring them up full of oil. So this isn't any surprise to the fishermen, but really the problem here is this huge amount of lying going on. So I said, if you want to change the end game, you know, we got to think about what it is that you want. Well, this originally started out as fake seafood. And the fishermen are also saying that they pull it up on their anchors when their anchors are on the bottom. So I've been thinking about this for a while, okay, before the scientists came out and basically validated what the fishermen have been saying. I have a newly declassified document from the incident command in Mobile, that it's a subsurface oil assessment plan. So indeed, you know, there is a plan to deal, well, there's acknowledgement that the oil is subsurface. Okay, so the scientists have now sort of documented that there's oil 2 inches thick or so flocculent material, especially in dips and depressions and troughs on the ocean bottom. And I think what happened here is that we have a science experiment from the lab that did not translate into the field. And by this I mean dispersants, when they're tested in the lab, they're tested in synthetic seawater, the efficiency test, the toxicity test. They're all done in synthetic seawater, which doesn't have components of bacteria, sediment, zooplankton, and all these things actively engage in the oil, dispersed oil and the dispersant, and they change it in the real world, in the Gulf. And, for example, copepods filter out these. They're a form of zooplankton that I actually did my master's on. They filter out these little micelles, these little micro droplets, mm-hmm. and then they literally poop them out. They package them with mucus and detritus and poop it out. And what this means is that the oil, dispersed oil, is not really dispersing. It's now attached to sediment particles and to little mucus fields that all attach together. And these things settle out on the bottom, like what the scientists are finding, and they also, lesser densities of them, settle out as these buoyant plumes that go up and down. So I think literally what we have is our lab tests that didn't translate well into the field. And if you look at the NOAA and EPA in May convened a group of supposed experts who looked very narrowly at whether or not dispersants should be used. And this report, it has extensive knowledge gaps that the experts all agreed that they didn't know. And one of them was, how does dispersed oil and dispersant really act in nature? I mean, they didn't know. So I think we're finding out that dispersant really acts more as a sinking agent than a dispersing agent when you're not testing it in the lab, when you're actually using it in situations like the Gulf.
And so now this oil has settled to a range from somewhere between 300 feet and 4,000 feet deep, they found it, in some cases several inches thick. What does that mean for the marine ecosystem?
God.
God only knows, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Here's the thing. On one hand, you've got naturally occurring seeps, which do occur, but and so there's some organisms that have adapted to oil as a food, oil as a food, basically. But what we're talking about now is a big release into what could be a sensitive environment that isn't really attuned to, you know, oil naturally occurring. And what's going to happen to it? And this whole dispersed oil in the sort of what's called the mesopelagic, the middle layer, middle deep, as opposed mm-hmm. to deep, mm-hmm. As opposed to surface. So the mesopelagic layer is where BP had cut loose the dispersants at the wellhead. And that the life in that layer, it migrates up at night into the upper water column, and it's a food source for things, and then it goes back down. So there, what I'm saying is that there's a huge potential for, you know, moving this oil out of the sediment, out of the plumes, into the food web, and around. And what's alarming to me is the FDA and four other agencies have all backed up the FDA's call to open the Gulf area for fisheries. I've been at dockside chats with these people. They seem like reasonable scientists, but as one of the fishermen down here said, I've never seen so many smart people saying such stupid things. And in particular, that was in reference to the dockside chat federal agencies saying that, well, they decided to open the fisheries based on the call, the assumptions that, one, there was no visible oil on the surface for at least 30 days, and, two, dispersants had been stopped spraying since July 19th. And we've proved both of those assumptions are wrong. I mean, based on the federal government's call, the states opened up the inland waters for fishing. We know there's oil in the inland waters. We know that there's closed areas right next to open areas. So what? Are the shrimp down there with a little map saying, oh, you can go in this area, but you can't go in that area? You know, the whole thing is just kind of crazy.
Okay, now this latest information, this discovery of the oil on the ocean floor came from not BP, but from a research vessel from the Department of Marine Sciences at the University of Georgia.
Yes.
Has BP acknowledged what this vessel has found? Because it has been, at least 2-3 weeks now since that discovery was made.
That is a good question. I have not directly looked into that. I have actually been in email contact with Samantha Joy today, who is one of the prime researchers on that boat that discovered the plume. The only sort of sideways acknowledgement I know is this recently declassified document that says subsurface oil assessment plan. And that's, I think it's on my website as a classified a doc. I should unclassify it now.
Well, what I'm wondering, is it possible, should it even be attempted to try to clean it up once that they've discovered where a lot of the oil did end up? Or should it be better left untouched? Not that there's a better scenario, but least worst-case scenario.
Another good question. I think we're all in the great Gulf experiment mode right now. I think if there's ideas, if anything's tried, I would hope that it was tried on a small basis before it's ramped up and applied across the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
It's not out of the question, I suppose, to try to vacuum some of this stuff up. I really don't know. I just know that it has not disappeared. So we're stuck with it.
And we're stuck with what, as far as what's happened to the fishing and tourism industry since the leak was capped, since the news crews left? It goes off the front pages and, unfortunately, out of a lot of people's minds. So what is the impact short-term on the Gulf Coast industries there?
As Dr. Steve Picou said, this is a technological disaster, because every meeting I go to, there's no all's clear. There's always an argument whether even it was a disaster and how much of a disaster it was. And what tends to be the case is that the public officials of communities are trying to put on this cheery face and say, come swim, come to the casinos, everything's fine. They've been doing that pretty much all summer, and they're still doing it. And what I'm seeing from a lot of other people, especially now that school has reconvened, are a lot of sick people. People have their kids out, in the summer. Okay, it's a little sore throat, or it's a little rash, whatever. And then when school starts, suddenly, oh, my God, there's a lot of children that are sick. And I have a new PowerPoint that I've been going up and down the Gulf giving, oil dispersant and illness. Is there a connection? The goal here is to try to educate the medical community that the symptoms for chemical illness mimic a lot of what is so-called common symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So educate the medical community. The medical community, by the way, really is wanting this. And also try to get some community health care centers across the Gulf. There's good news in that Jefferson Parish here has a community health care center, and it's starting up 2 satellites, one in Grand Isle and one in Lafitte, specifically because of the big all the illnesses that have occurred since the spill, or the kill, as you call it. So it's very much still in people's minds down here. I kind of think all we need is one good lawsuit from a visitor who came down to the Gulf and got sick. I have plenty of examples of that, and that would maybe make these officials hesitate a little bit. There has been Corexit marker, which is the dispersant marker, found in coastal waters by chemists in Alabama, Louisiana, and Florida, in a family's swimming pool that's about 15 miles inland. And the only way that could have happened, And their rashes started in May, by the way. The only way that could have happened was airborne deposition. So what I'm telling people is that don't breathe an all clear until at least the hurricane season has gone through. We have ample evidence that oil and the solvent are being taken up in the normal hydrologic cycle. Just, you know, it's hot, water evaporates, oil and solvent is coming with it, and it's getting up into the air and being transported and coming down as rain.
And as far as the oil on the bottom of the ocean in the Gulf area, Samantha Joy, who you talked to and is quoted in this article I have in front of me, said that this was found between the, you know, place where the horizon exploded and the coastline. So it's apparently all the way through there. And they said this is not old oil. They can tell this is something different. And she says, I've never seen anything quite like this.
Right. So this is this flocculent stuff that, I mean, this is what I'm talking about with copepod poop and all this other crazy stuff. I mean, actually, copepods are the number one way that oil from the surface gets to the bottom sediments, just without dispersant. Okay.
And I always say Ricky gets to the bottom of the story, gets the poop and all that. So
right.
A little bit of levity in an otherwise serious story here.
So, I mean, just chalk this all up to the Great Gulf Experiment. I mean, really, that's where we're at right now. We need a lot more scientists out here collecting information. It's only an experiment if people actually are looking and asking questions. And we have going on down here exactly what Exxon did up in Alaska, which is try to say, close it all down, shut it all down, don't look, everything's fine. I mean, to this day, Exxon still maintains there was no long-term damage from Exxon Valdez, while hundreds of other scientists have accepted the peer-reviewed literature and moved on and said, yep, oil causes long-term harm, specifically the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. We know that. So down here now we've got BP saying anytime there's a sheen or scum on the surface, BP is all over it saying it's algae, it's dissolved oxygen, it's anything but. So it's oil. And this is what you could expect from spillers. We've seen this before.
So we don't know yet the impact on the marine ecosystem because, as you say, this is the Great Gulf Experiment. What about on land? What have you seen since the oil was capped? Was there any tourist season at all? Are they eating local Gulf fish and shrimp? Was there any normal period between when that happened, when the oil stopped, and now? Or was it really pretty much all through the summer and they missed all that opportunity for tourism, for visitors, for their main industries?
So just to finish the Great Gulf Experiment, the ecosystem, we didn't know in Alaska. It took the scientists about 6 to 8 years to really do the generational studies, I mean multi-generation studies, to really address the questions. So anything that comes out, you know, this year, oh, green shoots, everything's fine, or next year, we got to hang with the Gulf for probably at least a decade to get some idea of what the full ecosystem impacts are. All right. Now, as for tourism down here, pretty much everything was trashed. There is a public perception, which, I mean, thank God, from a health perspective, that the seafood is probably not such a good idea to eat, and the beaches probably are not such a good idea to visit this summer. And that, at least that perception, even though there was massive attempts by advertising to overcome that, did keep, from everywhere I've been, it's a woe story about the economy. And the thing is, this really is BP's problem. And pretending it's okay is not really a good idea, I don't think.
Well, they said they're going to stay there till they make it right. Is there any sign that they are, quote, making it more right or less wrong or less awful?
No. All they're trying to do is to take out TV ads down here. People in four different states have complained to me about the TV ads. BP's dumping money, just buckets of money, into it, shoring up its public relations image, and while people are not being paid their claims. So, when BP says make it right, I guess we got to clarify what exactly they're trying to make right. I mean, they're obviously trying to make right their public relations.
And isn't it nice that they coined Brad Pitt's term for what he's doing in New Orleans after Katrina? I think his rebuilding, green building program is called Make It Right. And I don't know if he was flattered or appalled that they used his slogan. I think more appalled, actually. I saw him in an interview. And he called it vulgar, actually. But what can be learned? What should be learned? What's the takeaway from this unbelievable disaster before, you know, the public goes back to business as usual?
No, no. The public cannot go back to business as usual. That's the take-home lesson. What we need is a 1969 Santa Barbara outrage. And I'm beginning to believe now that what we, this whole squash of an aggressive attempt to control the image here was to prevent exactly that from occurring. Look what happened in 1969 with the Santa Barbara blowout. The national public galvanized, spoke with one voice, and said, we want better environmental protection. And we got it. There were laws passed. We created the Environmental Protection Agency. And here, what we have, I mean, this, we're literally at a crossroads as a nation. Do we get off oil? How do we get off oil? Not just oil, but basically all the fossil fuels. I mean, what's the transition period going to look like? And we've got the industry, of course, saying everything's fine. We just got to wring the last drop out. The Stone Age did not end because of lack of stones. And where we're at now is we've got the oil age has got to end before the last drop of oil. And that's only going to happen when the public outrage mounds and the people across the nation speak with one voice. And I'm still hopeful, even though we have this little lull in the national media right now, that we can use this event to transition, to demand a transition and demand a new endgame. It's not back to normal. It's not keep drilling increasingly risky areas. It's actually getting off this stuff and moving away, like a Europe. A large part of a Europe is done in other countries. We need to get into the 21st century here.
Ricky, thanks so much, and I know you need to get on with Ring of Fire. You have an interview. Say hello to my friend Robert Kennedy Jr., and really appreciate your being with us again on short notice. But I thought when I saw this story this week about the oil found at the bottom of the ocean, oh, that's where it went. I said there's only one person I want to hear it from. And
yep.
Thanks for telling it like it is. That's what you do so well.
All right, Betsy, you're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Get some rest, but not too long.
Okay.
We need your voice. Thanks so much.
Bye.
And when we come back from a very short break, we're going to be talking about oil in another iteration, and that is Proposition 23 on the California ballot. What's at stake? Who is funding it? It has something to do with that three-letter word, and we'll find out really what's at stake for all of us right after this.
Progressive Radio Network, celebrating 5 years.